Pushkin. It's been 50 years since Black Sabbath released Iron Man, but its guitar riffs are still some of the hardest and darkest in rock history. While Black Sabbath is often given credit for creating heavy metal, none of its members had the success or longevity of their original frontman, Ozzy Osbourne. In the 80s, Ozzy successfully turned his Prince of Darkness alter ego into a decades-long career. With help from his manager and wife, Sharon Osbourne, Ozzy's released 11 solo albums, with seven of them going multi-platinum. They also created Ozfest, a touring metal festival that became a mecca for metal fans everywhere, myself included. And of course, they had their pop culture crossover moment with their reality show, The Osbournes on MTV. Ozzy and Rick Rubin first met when Rick had just moved to LA, and the two became fast friends. Their friendship eventually turned into Rick producing the last Black Sabbath record, the reunion album from 2013. Ozzy's mostly kept a low profile since then, but at 71, he's back to making music. He has a new album called Ordinary Man. It's his first solo album in a decade. Rick, Ozzy, and Sharon sat on the bus at Shangri-La to talk about the record and how a gift from his father turned an ordinary boy from Birmingham, England, into the Prince of Darkness. This is Broken Record, liner notes for the digital age. I'm Justin Richmond. Here's Ozzy and Sharon Osbourne in conversation with Rick Rubin. They start things off talking about the track Ozzy did with Post Malone and Travis Scott, Take What You Want.
Did you hear the track Ozzy did with Post?
Mm-mm.
Oh, you've got to hear that.
Yeah.
And Travis Scott.
Post Malone's a big shot now, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
When Andrew came, he said, I did a song with Post Malone. I said, who the fuck is Post Malone? Yeah. That's so funny, you know?
He's great, though.
He's doing great.
Yeah, yeah.
I was stunned that it's just him on stage.
Yeah.
It's not a band.
A band, no, nothing, just him. Incredible.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Tell me your first memories of any performance. Anytime you, what was the first time you remember being on stage doing music?
I was in a band called The Prospectors because the singer was, it was sick. I'd never done a gig. We did a gig at Birmingham Fire Station. There's three firemen and a drunk in the audience. You'd think I was going to be shot. I was so nervous to go on stage. Yeah, that was the first gig I think I ever did.
Well, did then you do cover in... songs or?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Like blues, like Stones.
Yeah.
Them, yeah. You know. And it was back, I mean, the whole game has changed now. I mean, there's nowhere to play in it much anymore. I mean, when we were Sabbath, I mean, we messed around with different names. It was like a polka top blues band, Earth, and then we wrote the song Black Sabbath, and then Geezer said, why don't we call the band? And that was it then.
How did the band come together?
Well, I was in a band we called the Rare Ruby Geezer. I never did a gig with them. But the only reason I got gigs, so I had a PA. And so Geezer and I said to Geezer, I want to get out. He said, so do I. And shortly around that time, Geezer and Bill had a band called Mythology, and they'd been busted for smoking dope, and they had to break up because it was like the curse. So I used to go to the same school as Tony, and we didn't get on at school.
It was like high school?
Yeah. Mm. And one thing later on, we originally had a saxophone player and a bottleneck guitar player, because it was like the Fleetwood Mac, they were around. But the original Fleetwood Mac,
yes, the blues,
is nothing
the blues
to what Fleetwood they are Mac, now, yeah. What they ended up being.
Yeah.
And we used to go and see them. We'd go and see John Mayall's Blues Breakers. And there was a club in Birmingham called, I forgot the name of this club now. But we used to go in and we used to see all these different bands there, you know. I saw Canteen there one time. I was like, an American band in Birmingham. I was kind of freaked out.
How many people would be in a club like that then?
Not a great, just 700,000 at the most. No. Then there was a few clubs in Birmingham. We used to go with our van full of equipment just in case the band never made it. And we'd go anywhere and we'd go and play for. We'd be standing for bands like 10 Years After, Jethro Tull, and a few other bands.
Amazing.
And then we played with Jethro Tull, and Tony got offered the gig, and then I remember thinking, oh, no, it's gone now. Because Tony was somewhere else. For me. I mean, he still is.
Yeah. You
know? I mean, there's nobody on the face of the earth that can come up with them riffs like
that. The king of the riffs.
Oh, he's great. And then, you know, it was just... It's kind of we.
Did he ever play with Jethro Tull or no?
I think he did a couple of TV things. He did the Rolling Stones Rock and Roll Circus.
Yes,
which was a televised thing. And then he did a couple of things. We weren't with him too long, and he came back and he said, "If we get our stuff together, I think we can do it." I was like, "Fucking hell!"
He's so
left
cool.
Jethro to come back to us, and that was a big jump. That was. But Tony's one of these guys. He hates being told what to do. Mm. He'll fucking punch you on the nose if you know. I mean, I've seen him do it, you know. He hates being so. They told him you have to wear hats and he just went up for me. But everything was new. I mean, we'd get in the van, we'd play the Star Club Hamburg for like residency. But we had nothing to lose. It was exciting.
Did people like the band right away? Or
No. We do like at the Star Club. It was a good training ground because you do 45 minutes on, and then another band would go different every 45.
Trade back and forth.
Yeah. So we'd do one set, we'd blues songs, yeah. And Bill would do a drum solo for the one set. Tony would do a guitar solo for one set. I'd fuck around doing all this stuff and climbing ladders, painting my face and just generally pissing about, you know. But it was a good experience. It was better than being in Birmingham,
yeah.
Unemployed. You know, and so we just like lived from hand to mouth and it was fun. Any band that I've ever been in, the earliest stages of the band, have been the most fun because everybody's in the same boat. But that... I remember Jim Simpson, the original manager, saying, on the way down to the ferry, we just stop off at the recording studio, Regent Sound, and record them songs you've been doing. So we just got there, set up, recording, went on our way. 2 days, like two six-hour sessions, 12 hours.
So just like the live set,
basically. It was a live set without the audience, because we've been playing them live. So I remember coming back from... Europe for Christmas, and then the manager says, come over, I got the artwork to show you. I mean, back then, to have a gatefold album sleeve was like the big thing. And when we saw that first album sleeve, we were like, fucking hell, what is this? We've arrived just having the album.
Yeah, it was so cool.
And then the album came out, and we heard the album because when we recorded it, we never had the effects like the thunder, the weird voice effects, and whatever. And it was just amazing. And then I'm in a club. And my first advance was £105. I thought, I never thought I'd see that much money. So I'm in a club and this guy comes to me and he goes, Ozzy, he says, I've got some good news to tell you. I said, what's that? He says, your album enters the British charts next week. It's number 17 or something. Oh, you're winding me up. You're joking. And it remained there for like 18 months. And it was going up and down the charts. By which time, he had apparently went straight at number one. I'm like, what the fuck? Because you must know this yourself. You don't. When you're doing something, you like it.
Yeah.
But when somebody goes, oh, fucking, that's all you need.
Yeah.
But when somebody comes and says, your album's in the charts and everything's going one way, and it was just.
It doesn't make sense. It's like you don't believe it.
You don't believe
it. Surreal.
It's like. You can't accept it, you know. It's like, why? Well, I didn't complain. Things started to look up, and Sharon's father, one of the managers, then somebody else that worked for him, got us. And it was just, everything was up and up, and we got ripped off royally by management, and badly.
Do you remember
the
first time you did a show where people really liked
it? Oh, yeah.
What was the first time they liked it?
We did a John Peel radio show. We hadn't even written the songs by that point. And people started, when the album got in the charts, it was like, we used to play these underground clubs. Underground then was underground.
It was really underground.
But it was good.
Yeah.
Because word of mouth.
Yes.
Soul Black Sabbath in the first. We said, fuck TV.
Yeah.
Fuck doing this. We're a people's band kind of thing. And back in England then, it was like doing Top of the Pops was a bad thing. But we all did it all eventually. And it was just amazing. The first, sometimes you could Sabbath, Bloody Sabbath. Then the drugs, the alcohol, the wives, the divorces, and all the trappings, you know. We found out the manager was ripping us off. We tried to manage ourselves. We had no fucking clue. And the booze started to get heavy. I started to drink more, and Bill started to drink more. And me and Bill and Tony and Geese, and it just got ugly. No, it didn't get ugly. There was no fight. It was a band that we believed in what we were doing at first. And then we got royally taken to the cleaners, and we just thought, what's the point? And when they fired me, I thought, Sharon Svarda was managed yet again. And I thought, they said, we don't want you to be able to get fucked up all that time. And I've got to be honest, at that point, I just said, I'm done.
Sounds like it was already bad at that time anyway.
We ended up making music to pay our lawyers' fees.
Yeah.
And we all said to each other many times, we needed someone like Sharon or Sharon's father or somebody to come and say, hey, you need to dry yourself though, get your shit together and write something to tell us what was wrong, because our egos were running the show in under the influence of drugs and alcohol. Sharon's office got me an apartment in West Norwich, Le Parc, hotel. I thought I'd fucking last fling any money I got.
How old were you at that time?
I was 28, 30.
30, yeah. Mm.
I thought I'd the last binge. So Sharon comes up and she goes, listen, if you get yourself together, we want to manage you. Because I thought no one wanted to manage me. I was just a singer.
Yeah.
Then I met Randy, and then another thing happened.
Amazing. How do you meet Randy?
A guy called Dinah Strum from Slaughter. Remember that band?
Yeah.
Dinah Strum was my original choice for a band. Sharon got me auditioning people. I'd never auditioned anybody in my life. I go, no, I don't like him, Sharon. She goes, well, tell him. I go, no, you tell him. He might punch me in the nose. I could hit a woman. So Dinah said, he got me all these guitar players. I was out to lunch all the time. I'm in my apartment. Right? So I'm gonna bring this one kid around. Your gut is great. So I'm three sheets to the wind. And I'm in my apartment, and he comes in with this little guy, who must have weighed 105 pounds wet. I mean, he was like a woman. You know? I said, "Fuck! Oh, you gotta be joking." He said, "Just hear me out. He's gonna come out down to my studio. I'm studio working. Hear him play."
Yeah.
I go out to the studio. I'm thinking I'm hallucinating. This kid comes in with his little amp and blew my lights out.
Wow.
I mean, he was...
And you knew right away.
I mean, this kid was like someone else.
Yeah.
I was like, even in the fucked up state, so I went, do you want a gig? I mean, it was unbelievable. And then he came to England and I was still married to my ex, and he just stayed with me, living with me for a while. And we wrote Goodbye to Romance, the first song we ever wrote.
Incredible.
But then he was like this, he wasn't like, he didn't get paid, he wasn't a party. He was a true musician in the respect that he wrote music, he taught music, and he would give the opening bands lessons on fucking finger tapping and what. But it was, there again, it was the early time. Then we got successful and the fucking lawsuit started. Greed. But, for some reason, I've been out of Sabbath now 40 years, but it seems like the time that I was with him seems longer than I've been out with. I don't know why that is.
Yeah. It's just, it's such a defining band.
But when you're in it.
Yes.
You love the adulation, you love the success.
Yes.
But you just go, because you did it.
Yeah, you don't understand.
Well, I tell you what, I'll never forget about working with you in that studio.
Yes.
You do this every time I'd sing, you'd go, Ozzy, I'd have to like 9 times, you'd go, Ozzy, that was great. Just give me one more. I go, how can it be fucking in that fucking box?
Yeah.
That was fun.
Yeah. It turned out good. We made a good album.
Oh, it was great.
I love it.
Great, number one. That was our first number one,
incredible.
Both solo and B-side ever.
Incredible.
In America.
Amazing.
It was like number one in 13 countries.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, I mean,
so cool.
The album was called 13, number one in 13 countries. How about that?
Amazing. And you know, I remember the first time we talked about making the Black Sabbath reunion.
It was about 1982 or something.
So it was a very long time ago.
In that place off Sunset.
Yes,
with you and that other guy, and we were sat in your...
Yes, I remember we sat in that room and all the members were there.
Yeah, yeah.
And we talked about doing it then. And
now,
then,
me and you had spoken that before.
Before that, separately. Yes, yes, yes. And I remember, I don't know if you remember this, but for me, this was a big deal in my life. You came to my house one night before that house, my first house in LA. You came late one night after the Rainbow.
Yes.
And we listened to Black Sabbath music until the sun came up, and you performed a whole Black Sabbath performance for me in my living room. And it was one of the greatest experiences of my life because I never got to see Black Sabbath because you had already broken up.
I remember you going, listen, you got to make me a promise. If you ever get back with us, no, it's not going to go. But listen, if you ever get back with the boys, please let me produce an album. And you'd pop up at different places. I like that song. I remember being in the studio room. I don't know what we were doing. But you came in, you went, oh, the extra tracks on the live album. You go, I like that. That one sucks. And walked out. I mean, and then I kept going, Rick Rubin, he really wants to do an album. But yeah, it was fun doing that.
It was fun. It was fun, worked out. And it's funny that we talked about it like 15 or 20 years before, and then finally it came to fruition.
Do you know, I was talking to Andrew the demo, this guy, Andrew, what? I said, you know something? I'm a believer in this. The amount of people on this planet, and in one lifetime, you'll only meet a certain amount. And things are meant to happen the way it's meant.
Absolutely.
I'm a strong believer.
Me too.
I mean, when I was married to another woman,
yes,
I'd see Sharon and I'd go, I was always attracted to her. And it's amazing the way things turn out at the end of the
meant
day.
Meant to be. And you guys are incredible together.
Well, nobody else could put up with me. I know, but... it's just incredible. I look down that road and the things that's happened. I can't believe it sometimes. 71 and I just made another album.
Amazing. So cool.
The album's really good.
It's amazing when it just comes together like that, isn't
it? In a month, I've done it.
So great.
We'll be back with more from Sharon and Ozzy after the break. Here's Ozzy and Rick listening to Straight to Hell, the first single off Ozzy's new album.
Turn it up a little bit.
Come on now. scream, I'll make you defecate. And I will watch you bleed.
Your voice is ever eternal. It's like, it's unbelievable how much you sound like you all the time and how good it is. It's amazing. So exciting to hear.
Ordinary Man. Elton's on this one.
Let's hear.
Goodbye. When I do, you'll be all right. After all, I
How did that song come about?
It just came out, the first song we ever wrote.
It's so good. It's really good.
You know, I've been saying to something recently, most of the best stuff I've ever done has came out of nowhere.
Amazing.
You sit there for weeks and weeks. You think you've got it, and all of a sudden something happens.
I remember you telling me stories about the way Sabbath would write, where you would just jam and record the jams.
What Sabbath would do was just jam. And we'd pick riffs out and just link them together. And I'd say, stick a vocal on that. It was a good education because a lot of kids never heard of Donna's jam, you know. Maybe it was a lot of fun, you know.
Absolutely. Isn't it fun to make music? It's the best thing in the world.
I don't know anything else. I've been doing it 50 years.
And we're so lucky we get to do this.
Oh, I mean.
It's unbelievable.
I mean, I don't know where it came from, you know, but it's just, I'm complaining.
That's amazing. I hear like some of the Beatle influence writing and the string parts. So cool. And you sound the same, which is what's so incredible. It's like, you sound so remarkably like you every time, and strong and fresh, and all of the, there's so much energy in your voice. It's unbelievable.
You just do it. I mean, there's nobody else in my family has ever been involved in music in any way. I come from five other siblings. Two have died. But nobody's got any musical. Jack, my son, goes to me, Daddy says, I like the Beatles, but I don't see what you go on about. And okay, it's like this. Imagine this. Going to bed today in black and white and waking up in colour, that's what it was like.
Yeah.
And he goes, what? I just still don't understand. I said, we in England were just, it was like 1960 whatever early. And the war had ended 15 years ago, which ain't that long. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden this band comes out, which swamped the last thing we have that much mass hysteria was Adolf Hitler in Germany. They were like, fucking huge.
Do you remember the first time you heard them?
Yeah, exactly.
Tell me.
I got a transistor radio.
Yes.
And it was like then, it was, then they progressed to ghetto blasters.
Yes.
I'm walking down Poesy Ministry. I'm about fucking 13. And I'm leaning on the lamp and all this, leaning on the lamppost and fucking all these pub songs and what would be on the radio. Suddenly, She Loves You comes on. I stopped and it was like I was awakened.
Wow.
It was like, holy shit, I want Paul McCartney to marry my sister. I mean, it was just fantastic for me. And it was, I loved them. I absolutely, my wedding, my wall in my bedroom was covered in anything with the name on.
And anytime and anything they put out, you would get fucking, it immediately.
I'd work delivering food, coal, and whatever.
Yes.
And buy a Beatle record. I mean, it was fucking amazing. Which people go, you know, you do that to some people. No, I go, but the Beatles for me were it.
Other than the Beatles, were there other, who were the other things that really just lit you up musically?
The Kinks, really got me, right. Manfred Mann.
Yeah.
The Stones, Led Zeppelin.
Yeah.
I mean, when I first heard them first two Zeppelin albums, it was unbelievable. Like,
were you already a band yet or not?
Yes, but we were about a hair's breadth behind them. When I heard that first Zeppelin album, one and two.
Yeah.
But after that, I kind of lost it with them because we were doing our own thing. I used to go drinking with Bonham a lot.
Good guy. I never got to meet him.
He's like me, every drunk. Great when they're sober. When he's drunk, he's an asshole. You know, it's just juice.
I've been around you drunk. You were never an asshole.
Oh, fuck. Oh.
Not to me. I never saw. I've seen you bad, but I've never seen you unpleasant to be around.
I had my moments. I mean, I've had two wives. No, but it's ridiculous. I mean, I don't know a job, another job. The more fucked up you turn up to a gig, Oh, it's going to be crazy. It's going to be a good night.
I remember there was a story where one of you tried to kill the other. Which was it?
Oh.
That one.
He tried to kill you?
Yeah.
Okay. How serious was it?
I don't know. That's cool.
He had a blackout. Ozzy had a blackout. And it was really, really serious. But I knew something was happening because he'd been out of it for like a week.
Yeah.
So it was a week of like experimenting with pills and alcohol. And he was just like on a roll.
Yeah.
And you could feel it building. You knew something was going to happen. And it happened. But then he was good. Had to go into treatment for 6 months. He was good.
Yeah.
And then
he came out, got drunk again. But you know, they go, oh, I tried rehab, but it didn't work. You get it when you get it. If you don't get it, you don't get it.
Yeah.
I don't. To be honest with you, I have a problem walking without alcohol now. I'm with it. But I mean, if I was okay with it, I'd be still drinking.
Yeah.
But I got so fed up of feeling like crap without it, you know.
Yeah.
And then I must have been in 6 or 7 at rehabs, you know. 3 or 4, I don't know, a few rehabs.
About 15.
And then I just stopped.
Great.
I'm just about nearly 7 years now.
Amazing. Congratulations.
Well, our son is what, how many? 16 years?
17 years.
Wow.
He got sober at 17.
Wow.
Can you believe that? It's amazing. It really is.
Yeah.
I'll never forget what he said to me. We had a run. I said to him one day, it's a long time ago now. I said, what the fuck are you always complaining about? You've never wanted for a damn thing. What about a dad? That was a good fucking... And I just said, fuck. I said, Jack, I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
Because it's undeniable.
Yeah.
I was there, but not there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's what alcohol and drugs is.
Yeah.
Because you think physically you're there, but you're not there.
Yeah.
You might as well be back on the fucking road, you know. Mm.
We'll be back with more from Ozzy Osbourne after the break. We're back with more from Ozzy Osbourne.
Any of the metal bands that you liked?
Not really.
Okay. Any bands that came in the wake?
I didn't mind Van Halen. They were good. I mean, that last Black Sabbath tour we did was really... We had been fighting each other, fighting the world. And they were going down so well. And I'd go, let's fucking get up there. It was kind of like we needed a break from each other.
You loved AC/DC.
AC/DC. Oh, well, great.
Yeah. For me too, it's the Beatles and AC/DC are like.
Yeah.
I mean, Bon Scott was a great singer.
Great. Great.
Brian's all right, but I prefer Bon.
Yeah.
The Highway to Hell.
The rhythm section, the way those guys play.
I mean, they opened up for Black Sabbath in 1971, I think.
Wow.
In Sydney, Australia.
Wow.
They were great. I mean,
did you know, first time you saw them, you were like, you knew it was special?
Oh, I mean, Angus, to be honest, I thought it's a bit of a gimmick with a sash and a short pants. Yeah. But he's a guy, he didn't do all this. Behind the neck and all this fucking, he played meat and potatoes.
Yeah.
That's what I like about it. I mean, there ain't no one to touch Angus Young.
Yeah.
For that groove.
Yeah.
Down, you know.
Yeah.
And you can bang your head all day and not get fed up.
It's true.
I mean, they work their asses off.
But too, that you said about their rhythm section was brilliant.
Yeah, you just never heard any. The rhythm
section.
You can't beat that.
It was always so danceable.
Yep.
Even in its
I always used to say, why don't we try and do a fucking danceable kind of rap? Because Mr. Riff Man, he could fucking come if he wanted to. But Sabbath would try and fuck things up. What we would do, if anything sound remotely commercial, We throw a spanner in the works.
Yeah.
All these fucking words.
The weird changes and the...
That wasn't my cup of tea. I mean, yeah. And when they got Gerald Woodruff on keyboard, I was like, fuck this. Me and Bill used to travel together on a GMC mobile home, which was, looking back, we had such a fucking blood. It was like a fucking... He'd get up every morning. He'd have a coffee, glass of milk, a glass of orange juice, and a beer. Every morning.
All together.
Yeah. So I'd go, Bill, excuse me for asking you this. What's the deal with all this? What's the every morning? He goes, well, the coffee wakes me up. The orange juice keeps me healthy. The milk puts a lining on my stomach. And the beer puts me back to sleep.
He had it all worked out. So you rode on the bus with Bill, and he was your travel partner?
Yeah, yeah.
And then would Geezer and Tony team up?
No, that would be flying everywhere.
Mm. You preferred the bus?
Bill and I were, like, close. And when the actual end came, they got him to fire me.
Wow.
I bother.
Were you surprised when they fired you?
No. You know what? To be perfectly truthful to you, I'd lost it.
Yeah.
I just go, why do you have to fly all around the world to do nothing?
Yeah.
Isn't it? I mean, at one point I was going, well, Queen did this one did that. We should do that. And I said one day, don't you think we got a problem if the bands that we once influenced are now influencing us? Can we look at the way, and I wasn't any better than them. Oh, they were any better. I mean, it was just, we needed rescuing, but we didn't trust anybody. I didn't want to do it anymore with them. I was bored with the concerts. I was bored with the recording.
Yeah.
I was bored with it. I wasn't into it.
Yeah.
And I was, but the problem is, where do I go?
Yeah.
You've had a life from where you come from. It's been up, you fly everywhere, you stay in great hotels.
Yes.
And you know, I was thinking, if I've jumped, I'm done.
Yeah.
I'm never going to do it again.
Yeah.
And when Sharon came around and said, do you want to manage me? I was like, why does anybody want to manage me? I'm fucking... And then, lo and behold, it happened again.
Amazing.
And then... Because when I was doing my solo thing,
yes,
and
after Randy,
Metallica was opening for me. I'd come back to the dressing room every night. I said, "Are they just taking the piss out of me, joking with me?" And I go, "Why?" And every time I come past their record, I start playing Black Sabbath music. No, I think Black Sabbath are their heroes.
Yeah.
I didn't think. People would come and start talking about Sabbath all the time. And I'd go, you like that? And I got paranoid Iron Man warping.
Yeah.
And then it took on its own thing, you know?
Yeah.
It got bigger than we did.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, it kind of like, that's kind of fair statement. The myth of Black Sabbath.
Yes.
But we didn't really... I mean, Geezer's a great, great lyricist.
Amazing.
He writes...
And a great bass player.
Oh, for
fantastic.
Fuck. Nobody to touch him. He's fucking brilliant.
Fantastic.
I mean, the band, Bill in his day was a great drummer.
Yes.
Tony, he's always going to be the greatest. No one to touch him. And to this day, I still don't understand... how he plays guitar, because he's got no fingertips.
Yeah.
He plays with plastic fingers.
Yes.
I don't know. I've said to him time and time again, how do you know when you're hitting the string?
When you met him, had he already lost his fingers?
It was school.
How old was he?
I think he couldn't even watch more than 16, 17. And the doctor said, forget playing guitar, you'll never play again.
Wow.
And he's...
Proved him wrong.
I mean, he didn't not only play it again, he fucking become one of the world's fucking best.
Absolutely.
I mean, there's a man who, you know, when he got diagnosed with cancer, he went, right, what have I got to do? And he'll deal with it. That's him.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, I'm going to die. And he's like, right, what do I have to do?
Yeah.
He's like that. He's always been like that.
Yeah.
Very calm. He'd go, he's, don't panic. You know. He was the band, really, and we were all part of the band, but he was the most irreplaceable one. I don't know.
Hard to say. I feel like it's the four together is
it's
what
kind
makes
of like the Beatles,
it.
Isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's like
you can replace. You can't replace Ringo. No, you can't replace any of them.
You can't replace any of them.
But you don't know that because you always think, oh, Lion, I can't play an instrument. Yeah. I ain't as good as
but
him.
But it's often the. It's not who's best. It's the combination together that makes. It's like if you're cooking something.
Right,
it's not
recipe.
More garlic is better. It's the recipe.
Yes, right. But it's like you always think it's you that was called in the band back. Because I'm playing this, when people say to me, "Why did you always sing on the side of the stage?" I don't fucking know. It just fear, happened. Because Tony is one of the few people that could walk into this room now.
Yeah,
and I would fucking feel intimidated.
Wow.
He intimidates the fuck out of me.
Wow.
And he knows it.
Wow. But when on the album that we made last, I didn't get the feeling that there was any
heavy
feelings.
You know, I got the impression, I don't know, I've never known this, but he had his friend with him. I don't know what the deal was with him, why he brought him. Remember that guy he brought out with him?
Can't remember.
He was the guy who does his own work at home. I don't know. I mean,
his engineer, maybe?
Producer, engineer.
Yeah.
Because he's one of He wants to fill every hole.
Yeah.
And that's what happens, you know. So when we first did the first album, we did it on 2 4-track machines.
Yeah.
Bounced over. Then we had 8-track, then we had 16-track, then we had 32, and so on.
Yeah.
But and that first album and half of Paranoid, sometimes it was only done like 4-track. We didn't even dub it, everything. We went on the first album, Bill's drums were in mono. Mm-hmm. And Geezer only just started playing bass not long ago. You know, he used to play rhythm with me in the Rare Breed. But he just wanted to play. He's a great player. Great lyricist. And he was just, you know, I suppose in fairness to say, that the chemistry and the recipe was a good recipe.
Absolutely. And the tone of your voice next to the guitar, next to Tony's guitar, that combination...
It's just amazing.
No, it just happened. It's like it's a miracle.
I mean, I remember when we did Volume 4, which was originally going to be called Snowblind.
Oh.
But Warner Brothers said it's too drug-orientated, so now you get fucking gladly call it. I don't know how we used to do it. It's just... I've tried writing that formula with other bands.
Yeah.
It doesn't work.
No, it's unique to that particular group of people. And as soon as you guys came here and started playing, it's so unremarkable. It's like remarkable how much it always sounds like Black Sabbath when you guys are together. Like you can't not sound like, you could play a cover of someone else and it would still just sound like a Black Sabbath song, an original.
Yeah. But the only sad thing about that album I did with you was Bill wasn't playing. We'd have been still doing the fucking album now. I mean, because
it's funny because he almost was. I remember we rehearsed with him and he was excited and then he sort of backed away.
I mean, from the rip-off days, he takes so much time over everything. And Tony said to me one day, he says, you know, Bill's trouble. He still thinks everybody's going to rip him off, which I get. I mean, Sharon's my fucking, but I ain't no better than Bill. Or any of them. I'm lucky to have a wife who's on my side.
Yes.
Because these fuckers, man, they'd come in, they'd give you all this bullshit, drive you around in a fucking flash car, show you a bit of money, and then you can sue them and it takes you a fucking lifetime to win.
Yeah.
The lawyers win.
Yeah.
You've lost your star and then you're fucked. And that's what they go. Sharon Fryer was a renowned fucking ripper. But, you know, it's like, I love my wife now. I mean, I've done some stupid things since I've been with my Sharon. But sometimes you go, she must love me.
Yeah.
And I must be lucky to have someone that does love me.
Yes.
She, Well, he got stung for a lot of cash. But then again, I said to Bill Ward one day on the phone, a little while ago now, I said, you know what? You know, in a way, for me, as far as I was concerned, it was a blessing that I never got all that cash up front. Because with what cash I had, I'd done a good job of nearly killing myself.
Yeah.
And you did, Bill.
Yes.
I went, yeah, you're right. I wouldn't be sitting there, and that's for sure.
Yeah.
If I had got all the millions and all up front, we would have been fucking dead.
Yeah. Yeah, it's all...
Because money at the... I mean, you get kids from dad fuck all one day and give them $1 million. Fuck it out.
Don't know what to do.
Have you ever gone back to where you were at one time and you go, what the fuck was I thinking?
Yeah. All the time. It's like anytime I happen to tap back in or see an old picture or something and I try to remember what that was like, it's like a different life.
I know. It's like, how did I get there and from there? Okay, I mean, I was married. I had 2 children. I was done. I'd got a house, a car, holidays, somewhat, a bit of cash, drink when I wanted to. Bit of dope when I wanted to. So I thought that was it.
Yeah.
And then I thought, well, I mean, life's an amazing journey. You never know what's going to come up, you know?
No.
I mean, this last year, yes. I got up to go to the bathroom, fell on my face, and I'm virtually crippled till sleep gets better.
Wow.
And it's I snapped my, did something to my spine. But there again, I've fallen downstairs, I've fallen out of windows, I've fucking this and that. And it's something stupid, like I'm for a piss and falling on your face in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
That's typical, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Sod's law.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'll tell you what, somebody once said to me, Ozzy, what was the best gift you ever had? And I'm thinking, Sharon bought me a watch. I was trying to think. And then it fucking hit me. Had my father not bought me a microphone, I wouldn't be here.
Wow.
My father bought me a PA.
Yes.
Went into debt for it and bought me a microphone. And that's got me gigs.
Yes. Remarkable.
I mean, and I never repaid him because I was so fucking egoed out and I'm the king of the world for fucking 10 years. Then he passed away and my mom did it. So what I did, I'll give my siblings bits of money here and there.
But it does seem like it's meant to be. Like,
I mean, I think my poor old dad went to work, come rain, come shine, at nights for fucking as long as I can remember. And I never fucking crossed his palm at the end of it. I mean, he was still working. He was fucked up at the end of it.
He must have been really... regardless of that, he must have been really proud of your success.
Had to be. Before I got fired from Sabbath, I left for a short while, about a month or so, and I went to the press. I left. And my dad was in hospital. I said to him, Dad, I've got something to tell you. I left Black Sabbath. He went, they're finished.
So he always backed you.
He was a good dad.
It sounds like it.
Good, simple man.
Yeah.
He just, I mean, I wish sometimes I'll go to, I wished he was here for me to have a chat like I'm talking to you now.
Yes.
I'd love to have a chat with him now.
Yes.
And somebody once said to me, he said, I never get on with my father, but he's on his deathbed. I don't know whether I should go and see him or not. I said, let me tell you something. Whether you got something nice or bad to say to him, do it now.
Go
because
went
up the road, he ain't here. You're going to kick your butt forever.
Yeah.
Just say what you got to say.
Yeah. How's your relationship with Jack now?
Oh, it's great. Good. He's got 3 girls. He got married. He got fucking divorced. And I mean, I love him. I love my kids with Sharon. I go, they all take off me. They're all fucking, I'm sponging off me. But they go, Dad, I go, what is he?
Yeah.
You wait till your boy gets older.
Yeah.
Boys are cool.
Yeah.
Girls will send you to a fucking lunatic asylum. I'm not joking. Jack goes, what the fuck? Come on, we've got to fuck. Go on the shooting range or something. But Jack, he's a great father. He's a great, he's really hands-on dad, you know. Which I wasn't so much. The fucking hands on me was to get me back to bed. It's been great seeing you, Rick.
Same, man. A pleasure always. And I hope to see you again soon.
We'll, absolutely. Give us
we'll
a bell.
Hang out and listen to music.
Thanks to Sharon and Ozzy Osbourne for stopping by Shangri-La to catch up with Rick. Ozzy's new album, Ordinary Man, is out now. And also be sure to check out Ozzy.com to keep up with the Osbournes. You can hear some of Ozzy's music by visiting BrokenRecordPodcast.com, where we have a playlist available for you to listen to. And while you're there, sign up for a behind-the-scenes newsletter. Broken Record is produced with help from Jason Gambrell, Mia Lobel, and Leah Rose for Pushkin Industries. Our theme music's by Kenny Beats. I'm Justin Richmond. Thanks for listening.